Hello, and it's Wednesday, the 1st of July, 2009, in the middle of a heatwave. Welcome to the Phonecast, produced in association with Mobile News. My name is Ian Graham, I'm your host for the next 20-25 minutes, and with me is Mark Bridge, who's an independent technology writer, and also joining us today is James Rosewell, the owner of a mobile technology business. And in this week's program, we'll be bringing you the latest news and rumours from the mobile phone industry, starting as usual with an update of headlines from the past 7 days. And later, we'll be asking what should be happening to promote mobile payment technology, one of the fast rising stars of this industry. Let's start with the news. And good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think we start here with a really good news story, at least for the consumers of this industry. Roaming charges, James.
Well, that's right. From today, new European roaming charges have come into effect. These are the maximum capped rates agreed by the European Commission. Individual networks can charge less if they wish. Customers on standard mobile tariffs will now pay no more than 11 euro cents for sending a text message while abroad in the EU. That's around 11p, including the VAT. And the maximum cost for making calls will be 43 euro cents or 42p, including the VAT. And receiving calls will be 19 euro cents per minute or 19p, including the VAT. Now, we've also got a cap on the wholesale data charges of 1 euro per megabyte downloaded, although it's not yet known exactly how this will affect consumer pricing. Currently, the lowest standard data roaming rate appears to be on the Three UK network, which has just dropped its charges to £1.25 per megabyte.
This is good news for the consumer, and made even better, I think, by people like Vodafone cutting their charges or abandoning their roaming charges altogether.
If you're on the Vodafone passport.
Mm.
It's also good news for the networks as well, because it will help smooth out the summer blip as business people make less calls and consumers make less calls because they're concerned about pricing when abroad.
So it should generate more traffic, shouldn't it?
I don't think it will have a massively negative effect if they use this in the right way, and clearly Vodafone have been very innovative, which is nice to see.
Excellent. Well, here's another story concerning our friends at Newbury, although I will put a prediction in here, unlike I know it's not the end of the year, but I don't think this will happen. Do you think Vodafone are going to take T-Mobile over, Mark?
Personally, no. But earlier this week, the financial press was full of reports suggesting just that. Vodafone had been considering the purchase of T-Mobile's UK business. T-Mobile's estimated to be worth around £3 billion in the UK, and that kind of move would give Vodafone clear leadership, again, of the UK mobile phone market. It would actually give them something like 40% of all UK subscribers, which, of course, would get competition regulators very interested in the deal.
Wouldn't it just?
An alternative might be a partnership, rather like the recent Australian deal between Vodafone and Hutchison. Either way, neither party has issued any official comment at the moment.
Well, I'm sure this story's got legs and we're going to hear more of it, but I cannot see the regulators allowing it unless it is by this special partnership deal.
Well, bear in mind the market's moved on a lot in the last 10 years, and maybe the regulator will look to a slight consolidation from the five main networks to four. You know, Vodafone are no stranger to these issues. When they bought management, they had to sell Orange.
Yeah,
because they weren't allowed to retain their stake in Orange. Perhaps there's a way they can take certain bits of the business or work in partnership with others.
Mm.
It just seems way too much trouble for Vodafone. A partnership between, say, T-Mobile and Three, now that doesn't seem anything like as much trouble to set up. But Vodafone and T-Mobile, it just seems way too much hassle for everyone involved.
Mm.
It does, and you might have a point there. Three might be... It might be a quick way for them to consolidate their holding in the UK.
Mm. Well, this story isn't going to go away. I'm sure we're going to hear more of this. And here's another. Oh, we've been banging on about this for a long time on the Phonecast as well, with manufacturers showing commitment to universal mobile chargers. At long last, hurrah! 10 mobile phone manufacturers, Apple, LG, Motorola, NEC, Nokia, Qualcomm, Research in Motion, Samsung, Sony Ericsson and Texas Instruments have told the European Commission they're committed to producing a universal mobile phone charger using the micro USB standard. They've submitted a memorandum of understanding to the EC, which will help to reduce electronic waste and will also make life easier for consumers. Two excellent goals. It covers all mobile phones that can exchange data via USB, although unusual mobile formats such as wristwatch phones are excluded. that huge market then. The EC had previously said it would introduce legislation if the mobile phone industry was unable to reach such an agreement. It now says it'll introduce a new standard supporting the memorandum. Well, that's, I think, just good for everybody.
It certainly is. They just now need to stop including a charger with every mobile phone they sell.
Yes. I could sell a few from a box in my office here, I can tell you.
The one there that an awful lot of mainstream media have picked up on is Apple, of course. And that attracts my attention for a slightly different reason, which is at the moment, Apple have this pretty big connector on the bottom of their phone that has an awful lot of terminals on it. And to squeeze all that into micro USB, it's not out the question, but it does make you think, hang on a moment, are you going to be using micro USB for charging? And are you still going to have another cable for data transfer?
Maybe they'll have an adapter between micro USB and the Apple iPhone, just for charging.
Yes, maybe. I thought, Mark, you wouldn't complain about your wristwatch phone wouldn't be able to work, but, well, there we go. You'll just have to get by, won't you? Tell us about HTC, the hero, the T-Mobile G1 launch.
The hero is finally here, a well-specified phone running the Android operating system. Last week, HTC announced that the Android-powered HTC Hero, which is also going to be the new T-Mobile G1 Touch, but unlike the G1, this Android phone isn't going to be exclusive to T-Mobile because, as the HTC Hero, it's also going to be available on Orange, although each network will have an exclusive colour choice. The HTC Hero has a 5-megapixel camera phone, and it's got a multi-touch screen. Plus, it's got a Davy Flash built in, and it'll be in the shops from later this month. So that's the G1 from T-Mobile or the HTC Hero, both, in fact, the same phone, although different colours to avoid confusion.
Yes.
You'd have thought keeping the same name would actually avoid confusion.
Yeah, T-Mobile want to keep this G1, and Google want to keep this G1 thing going. I can kind of see it makes sense.
Why? It's a different phone. Why not, at the very least, call it the G2?
Call it the G2 by all means, but Google will want to have a phone that has their brand on it, and they've obviously done the deal with HTC and T-Mobile. And for people who like Google and like their applications and want to know what they're getting, then it makes some sense.
Call it the G7, it could then get confused with a group of financial wizards meeting in London, couldn't it?
You fast forwarded to 2014 there, Ian.
Now, here's an interesting story. I don't quite believe this headline either, Mark, but I'm sure you're going to give us the truth behind this. Almost 5% of Vodafone UK customers, which is an awful lot, have an Apple iPhone. Well, that's nice, isn't it?
It is. That's not quite the truth, but I thought it made an interesting-sounding headline. The latest figures from AdMob suggest that over 50% of O2 UK customers and almost 5% of Vodafone UK customers are using an Apple iPhone. AdMob delivers advertising to the mobile web, which means it's able to track the devices it's delivering to. Whenever a mobile phone views a web page with an AdMob advertisement in it, the company gets a request to display the ad, and so it can come up with the figures from that. In May 2009, the company handled over 282 million ad requests for UK customers. That in itself is pretty impressive. Mm. It's calculated that the bulk of its requests, 48.7% of all ads, were for Apple devices. When it comes to individual UK networks, the most popular handset on the O2 network was, perhaps unsurprisingly, the iPhone. Nokia led on the 3 network, Sony Ericsson on Orange and T-Mobile, and BlackBerry devices were most popular with Vodafone customers. Yet AdMob says also around 5% of Vodafone customers were using an Apple iPhone. Of course, it's worth pointing out that AdMob's results only apply to phones that browse the mobile internet, and they aren't representative of the entire mobile internet, just the brands that AdMob has relationships with. But even so, it's an interesting snapshot and an interesting perspective on iPhones getting around.
Yes, and if the figures are to be believed as they stand, the unlocking business is well and blooming somewhere, isn't it?
Certainly is, and it's actually relatively easy to unlock an Apple iPhone. You can do it all from software on your home PC. It doesn't require any specialist or particularly specialist skills, and there are people who set up literally unlocking toolkits for dummies, basically. You know, step one, step two, step three, it's unlocked.
Well, even someone like me could do it.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
You're very kind. Office moves for Vodafone and Orange. I don't think they're swapping offices, but Vodafone is moving senior staff from its global headquarters in Newbury to London, although its UK business will still be based at the company's Berkshire site. CEO Vittorio Colao will move to Vodafone's Paddington office in October. In total, about 200 Vodafone staff are moving to Paddington, although 900 will remain in Newbury, along with 2,400 staff from Vodafone UK. Meanwhile, Orange is cutting around 190 jobs in the next 3 months and phasing out a further 180 roles by the end of the year. In addition, staff at Orange's St Albans office will be moving to the company's London and Bristol offices. I don't think people will notice much change at Vodafone if only 200 out of 3,500 people are moving to London. I don't think that's going to give more gaps in the car park somehow.
There'll be more people wanting to have meetings in Paddington, though.
Yes. I wonder if we can guess what the reason behind that move is. Can we? Do we want to...
I understand there's quite a some quite good Italian restaurants in the area, certainly more than Newbury.
Closer to investors. Closer to investors, gentlemen. That's the reason.
Yes. I think we should move on hastily because we all want a job soon. James, a story about YouTube uploads. Sounds good. And more or less, it's a good news fancast this week.
It's all very indicative that the mobile web is finally starting to happen, led at least, if you believe the hype, from the iPhone. We're a little bit cynical about all of that, but there is evidence that the new iPhone 3GS really is changing the way people use their mobile phones. The number of video clips recorded on mobile phones and then uploaded to YouTube has increased by 400% since the video-equipped Apple iPhone 3GS was released. The bigger picture, no pun intended, for mobile video is also good. The volume of mobile phone video clips uploaded to YouTube has increased 17-fold in the last 6 months. So 400% since the iPhone 3GS was launched a couple of weeks ago, and 17-fold, 1,700% in the last 6 months.
Is this really down to the iPhone? Is this what's driving this? Or is it a mixture of all the smartphone lookalike devices?
It's all the smartphones, but the iPhone in particular, as Apple do very well, make it really easy to do things. Mm. So, you know, a Nokia, just being a bit high level about it, but probably takes twice as many clicks, and you have to kind of read the instruction manual, whereas the iPhone is just that little bit more intuitive.
Right.
And it's bound to cause a blip in figures because... it's a feature that's only just been made available. They sell a million of them over the weekend. People are buying it because that feature's on there. Therefore, they're going to use it. They're going to play with it.
Yeah.
So whether or not that little increase is sustainable is, to an extent, almost irrelevant because, as you say, the bigger picture is that mobile phone video clips are on the increase anyway. Mm. We're getting into summer. So many other reasons, but it's... Mm. Overall, very good news.
Yeah, and what we haven't said is that 99% of the videos that are uploaded are complete rubbish.
Don't sit on the fence, James. Say what you mean.
Let's put it another way. They're only of interest to a very niche group of people who happen to know you.
Yes. All right, moving on swiftly. Mark, again, more good news. This is great. Mobile ad revenue, which is something, again, we've been talking about for a long time on the phone call, is finally on the move by quite a bit.
Oh, it certainly is. A few weeks ago, we reported that global spending on mobile advertising was forecast to increase to £3.5 million by 2014. Now, a Eurocentric survey from First Partner says that mobile advertising revenue in Western Europe will increase by 50% every year between now and 2013, exceeding €950 million, £813 million on my calculator, in 2013. The UK, best of all, will lead this growth, generating over €200 million from mobile ads by 2013. Mobile search will continue to be the most dominant revenue stream.
This is kind of in line with everything else we've been hearing, and further enhances confidence for companies that are getting into this space.
And can only be good news, can't it? Particularly for the UK, as we, for once, are leading something.
Well, it depends on your view on advertising. I think what has to happen is the targeting of adverts needs to be much improved. Mm. And I still think there's a long way to go there. And we certainly don't want to see people being irritated by the way advertising is deployed to mobiles.
I am already irritated, James. The UK has at least 6.8 million different mobile deals. Ofcom-accredited mobile price comparison service Bill Monitor, I thought he used to be the chief exec of Vodafone, says it's currently comparing 6.8 million different mobile deals. The phenomenal figure includes retailer-specific tariff and handset deals, which makes it possible for Bill Monitor's users to find the best combination of price plan and mobile phone. Well, that must be some spreadsheet.
It must be. This is from Bill Monitor, which, as you say, it's actually the only Ofcom-accredited mobile price comparison service. But the reason it's this ridiculously high figure is because there are so many retailers out there chucking in odds and ends to make their deal the best. So when you look at the combination of which handset do you have and which tariff do you have and how long do you have it for and how much do they charge you for the tariff, and do they give you 3 months of free line rental or 2 months of free line rental, and is anybody throwing in a Sony PlayStation 3, that's how you get such a high figure in the end.
No wonder people are confused.
And the impressive thing about Bill Monitor is that they've hooked up with Vodafone, Orange and O2 to use their online account management and bill viewing services in order to be able to look at the last 3 months of actual mobile phone usage. And a brief look through their website shows that they're keen to do the same thing with the other mobile networks.
Okay. All right, well, let's have a bit of fun. Let's build on a rumour that we started and have talked about for some time. Tell us about PlayStation mobile phones.
Yeah, this is Sony getting their branding sorted out. Sony PlayStation phone rumours, they're just not going to go away. Japan's Nikkei Business Newspaper says Sony is still thinking about a combined mobile gaming device and will set up a project team next month. Although we've heard the rumours several times in the past, this is a particularly credible source. Sony hasn't commented on the speculation. My thinking on this is that if they're only just setting the team up now, then they're at least 2 years away from launching anything meaningful. And I sincerely hope for Sony, and particularly Ericsson's sake, that they, you know, this is put out there to put the competition off the scent, and that they're closer to launch than they're letting on.
But Sony haven't commented, James.
They haven't, and let's wait and see what comes out. But certainly they're going to get a lot of value from these brands if they can do it.
And just very briefly, whilst we're on the subject of rumours, we're hearing that Vodafone contracts could be back in Carphone warehouse stores by the end of this week. Nothing confirmed yet, but we'll make sure we cover it on the blog, and of course it'll be in next week's podcast.
Mm. And finally, something is a sort of tinge with sadness, Mark, but tell us about the late, great Michael Jackson.
Well, yes, Ian, I was going to end with a sad story that reflected on the death of Michael Jackson, and wondering why T-Mobile thought it was necessary to tell us that 2 million more text messages than usual were sent on its network on the Thursday night, and it also saw a 150% increase in UK call volumes at the same time. I was expecting maybe some kind of celebrity death chart showing how successful you were compared with network usage. Seemed a bit of a grim topic for T-Mobile to start talking about, so instead I'll pick something cheerier to end the news on. Last week I discovered not one but two surveys that seemed to show Americans prefer their mobiles to many other things. Best Buy Mobile found that 60% of adults would rather give up alcohol for a week than give up their mobile for a week. 33% would rather ditch their TV than their phone, while a scary 15% would rather have a filling at the dentist than live without their mobile handset. And shoe retailer Zappos.com found that 31% of women ranked their mobile phone or PDA as more important than their spouse or hired help when it came to organising their life.
This is America, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so we didn't take too much notice of it then.
The percentages would be slightly lower over here, I feel.
Well, give up alcohol for a week. Oh, come on, let's get real. And that's all the news we've got time to fit in this week, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Very interesting, as always. You're listening to the Phonecast, and now it's time for our feature this week. In recent months, we've been talking quite a lot about mobile payments. So this week, we're taking a closer look. James and Mark are still with me. And James, it seems to me there are two types of mobile payments. There's buying online using your mobile internet connection, and there's using your phone as a physical wallet. Is it as simple as that? Or, quite like me, have I missed something out?
Oh, it's almost right. At the moment, you can use your mobile phone to buy things like ringtones, music, that sort of thing, online through various different portals. The networks tend to have their own portal. Apple obviously have iTunes, etc. And what you're doing there is you're buying a piece of content. You're not buying something physical. And the networks, particularly when it's a network service, it's effectively the same as premium rate SMS. They're getting a large percentage of the money, usually upwards from 30-40%, depending on the deal and how it's been set up. Yes. So that's fine if you're selling content like ringtones, pictures, etc. But if you're selling CDs or DVDs or some physical item that needs to be dispatched, you can't have a payment mechanism where the provider is taking that greater percentage. So when we talk about online payment for your mobile phone, we're talking about those kind of services. I did mention Apple there. They take 30% of the applications that are loaded onto the the Apple App Store. They take 30%, and iTunes is slightly less, depending on the deal that they've done with the music industry. Obviously, we don't know the details of that. But I digress slightly. We're talking about those kind of payments, as I say, for content. And then we've got the physical world, whether that's going onto a website and using your phone instead of a credit card, or using your phone instead of a debit or credit card in a retailer. And it's that latter type of payment that is less prevalent at the moment.
What do you think is stopping the implementation of NFC payments then?
Well, before we look at NFC and mobile, we just have to look at NFC in general. And just to remind people, NFC is near field communication.
I knew that.
In easy to understand terms, this is like Oyster. If anyone's used the London Underground, you just wave the card over the sensor and it lets you through the barriers and it takes payment from a prepaid card effectively. And NFC has been sort of much touted by Visa and Barclaycard in particular. Barclaycard have had quite a catchy little TV advert, a guy going on a water flume ride, basically from his office to home, and along the way he buys some bananas and does some other bits and pieces using his contactless credit card. And that particular proposition is really targeted at physical retailers, high street retailers, selling things for less than £10. So McDonald's is a good example. Anything that Starbucks, you know, anything that sells a high volume at relatively low price is a great target for these sort of NFC contactless technologies. Now, how does that relate to mobile? Well, clearly there has to be a lot of these enabled retailers effectively out there in order to make it worthwhile for the networks to deploy mobile phones that have this capability. And also the proposition has to do more than just effectively strap a contactless credit card to the back of the mobile phone. There has to be more kind of value from having a mobile phone as part of the whole deal. And that really hasn't been worked through. But I think more importantly, that the whole proposition is being deployed so badly in the UK at the moment. The retailers are not really deploying the point of sale devices very well. They don't necessarily have an incentive to do it. It's just not joined up enough, really.
So, James, is the problem with the mobile industry, or is it with, in fact, the banks?
At the moment, with contactless payments, it's predominantly with the banks and the retailers. So the schemes, Visa, MasterCard in particular, and then the banks, or the credit card divisions of banks, effectively, that are sort of spearheading the drive, that the retailers, because they're not deploying the technology properly. But I think more importantly at the moment, it's a solution looking for a problem, because from a retailer's point of view, if you're a corner shop and you handle cash, you're pretty used to handling cash. Now, we must remember that there is a cost for handling cash. There's insurance, securitor coming around, paying it into the bank, counting it up. You know, that all takes time and, you know, it's not free, but retailers are used to it. And now, using near-field communication, they would use this contactless technology to take payments that they previously would have taken in cash, and then they have to pay someone else for the privilege of handling that transaction for them. So from a pure accountant's point of view, it has to be cheaper than handling cash, or there has to be some other benefits. And the main areas we see benefits of where we have retailers who sell a lot of low-value items in high volume, like Starbucks, where, you know, getting that queue processed quicker is going to make customers happier. I think it's yet to be known exactly how many people turn away because of the length of the queue, but it may also increase the number of units that they sell. So ultimately, in answer to your question, I think it's more with the banking industry at the moment and the retailers and the mobile industry seem to be playing quite a cautious game. The only thing we've actually seen them do is, in my opinion, purely for marketing and headline purposes and maybe to appease any shareholders that think they should be getting into this space.
I very much agree, James. I think the real problem here certainly isn't with the mobile industry. I think the problem is with the banks and the retailers and perhaps even with adopting existing technology. There's plenty of existing technology out there that can be used for mobile payments. For example, telephone calls, premium rated telephone calls, they can be used for car parking. Similarly, premium rated texts can be used for car parking, can be used for ticketing. People haven't adopted these yet, and if they haven't adopted these, then this much bigger technological leap to what, certainly from a consumer's point of view, is unknown technology isn't going to happen. People haven't seen, used, trusted what's out there at the moment enough, I don't think, for them to leap forward to having near-field communication mobiles.
So what, gentlemen, is the single factor? What's the magic silver bullet that will encourage mobile payment adoption in the UK?
I think the mobile networks need to make a brave stand and get involved. And by that, I mean they have to start looking at the overall proposition and the customer experience and applying their knowledge of their customers and how their customers work and use their mobile devices to the information that the banking industry and the retailers have. And these three groups need to start working together. Is that actually going to happen? Probably not, because certain players are going to want to try and own the market. And there's no incentive, there never has been, for people, you know, those so many diverse companies to cooperate in the way that I just described. So I think it's going to be fragmented for some time to come. But ultimately, there will become an emerging standard and everyone will have to get behind it.
Do you concur with this, Mark?
Pretty much, yes, Ian. What single factor? Well, it's got to be a genuine advantage to the end user. That's the single factor. And okay, we've seen technology introduced that hasn't had perhaps that obvious advantage. For example, we've had chip and PIN introduced to replace signatures on credit cards. Now, to my mind, remembering a four-digit PIN number is actually more difficult than remembering how to sign my name. However, we've been told that's there for security, although in reality I think it's more there for the security of the retailer and the bank than it is for my personal security. But nevertheless, we've been sold it and we've adopted it, but we've adopted it because we've had no choice. Now, if money were outlawed, everybody would be rushing out to pick up an NFC mobile phone. But at the moment, cash still works when my mobile phone's battery goes flat.
Mm. I can subscribe to that theory, you know.
Yeah, I think the other thing there, Ian, that we haven't really touched on, and you know, we could spend hours discussing this subject, is disintermediation, where we're looking at person-to-person payments and online payments, near-field communication, and this contactless technology is only applicable on the high street. It doesn't cover online, it doesn't cover person-to-person payments, and I think mobile payment solutions need to address all three.
Well, it's clear that mobile payments have the potential of helping the mobile industry, the banking industry and consumers. But they'll only work if everyone benefits from the technology. And it seems that none of the major players have yet made a convincing case. Well, let's hope that changes pretty soon. And that's all we can fit in this week. You've been listening to The Phonecast. The programme is updated every Wednesday morning and can be downloaded automatically to your PC, smartphone or music player. To download the podcast every week, visit our website at thephonecast.com, that's thephonecast, where you'll discover an RSS feed, a Twitter feed, regular news updates, an archive of previous broadcasts, and a built-in audio player that lets you hear any of our programmes. Alternatively, to use iTunes to automatically download the podcast, visit mobilenewscwp.co.uk, click podcast, and then click the iTunes button. In addition, you can listen on the Independent Mobile Phone Dealer Association's website at impda.co.uk. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with another show next week.